Hello and welcome to Secrets I'll Never Tell with me, Benedict Cork. This is a little podcast mini-series to go alongside my new EP, which is also called Secrets I'll Never Tell. I want to chat to people I really respect and admire about stories and their lives, and this week's guest is the incredible Sophia Tarkor. She is an award-winning spoken word artist, songwriter, poet, and author of a beautiful book of poetry called Somebody Give This Heart a Pen, which I read in lockdown last year and loved. She's performed at Glastonbury, at events with the BBC, The Guardian, the Royal Family. She's given two incredible TED Talks, and she also happens to have the most calming, soothing voice and the most interesting things to say. We chatted about vulnerability and creativity, how important it is for her to be authentic in her work, and she also performed a brand new poem at the end of the episode, which is awesome. So I really hope you enjoy this one. Here is Secrets I'll Never Tell with Sophia Tarkor.
Should we get started?
Yes, let's get into it.
All right. Well, first question, how are you? How has the last year been for you?
Oh my gosh, the last year, I think this question will give me PTSD for the rest of my life. even during years that were good. How has it been? It's been, I think, challenging for everyone, right? I think for me, it has suppressed me as a person. So I think I'm on stage like most of the year, whether it's performing, meeting new people, but I'm very much an external version of myself. And for a year, suddenly it's just you and your thoughts and nothing to bounce yourself off of.
It was such a reflection.
Yeah, so it's been quite suppressed.
Yeah, and I sort of, as much as I don't like basing my self-worth on like validation and stuff, you do occasionally need people to just be like, you know, pat you on the back, you're doing all right, you know, whether it's off a show or even just with friends or family or something. But to not have that means you can just kind of live in your head the whole time and just second guess everything, which is really...
This is it. How do you know if a tree falls, you know, if no one's there to hear it? How do you know if your work's good if you are just making it from your head?
Yeah.
No one can see it. Yeah. I think a lot of the confidence that I had in writing came from knowing that I've seen what it can do on stage.
Exactly.
And then suddenly that was taken away. It's like, can I even, does this even rhyme? Or is this just a state of my mind telling me it does?
Yeah. And you miss that kind of buzz of like trying something new for the first time. And even if it falls flat, it's kind of exciting. And there's only so much you can do on a live stream or an online concert or something to get that kind of interaction. But it's nothing the same. It's not the same as the buzz of a live gig.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's nothing like it. The energy, you can feel it. Like the air's thick in a gig, you know?
Yeah. Have you come up with any sort of like rituals or anything just to kind of maintain positivity for the last year?
You know what? I feel like I keep on saying the same thing. So take each day as it comes and just remember that this is just a season and try and be productive when you can, but don't force yourself. But honestly, if I'm honest, I've been chaos. I've been in a state of chaos for like 13 months, basically.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So when work projects come up, it's amazing because it kind of focuses me. I've written 3 books in the lockdown.
Wow. Oh my God.
Yeah, so when projects come up, it's been amazing because you can focus on one thing. But literally, the day after I hand something in, I go back into this frenzy of, am I going to get live shows? Because I know that the massive artists are going to get live shows because those kind of festivals still have a budget. Literature festivals have no money anymore. Most of them have been cancelled. So I'm just like, I've been holding my breath to perform again, and I don't know when I'll be going on stage. So that frenzy definitely sinks in. But I think, again, like, it is a game of just remembering that you have to adhere to the emotional reality of a pandemic, which is that it is going to impact you mentally, physically, and in every way. You are not going to be the same person that you entered the lockdown in. And I think I've just had to make peace with that. Like, I am more quiet now. I am more suppressed now. I am more melancholy than I am extrovert now. And I think I detested it a bit because I was kind of like, I miss the old me. Like, I miss my charisma. But now I'm just like, you know what? It will come back. You know, put me in a festival field, it will come back. But this is the season. You know, when a leaf falls, it doesn't say it's been defeated. It just accepts that this is the current season it's in. And summer will come again, spring will come again. And so I think I just keep on telling myself that, like, this is just a season and this too shall pass. And I don't need to come out. I don't need to come out as if I've lived 2 whole years because we've lost years. You know, like, even if I come out and start again, that is fine because the world is on pause. It's not like, yeah. I mean, it's essentially on pause. I think you've got to give yourself the same grace that you give other people when you advise them. And that is to just take it easy. So I think, yeah, I've been telling myself that quite often, but for the most part, it's been chaos.
God, I love that. I mean, I could listen to you speak on that for hours. And you're so right. Like having, when someone else phones you in a panic or in a bit of a daze in the pandemic, it's so easy to give out this advice, but actually kind of adhering it to yourself is the hardest thing.
For sure.
I can hear myself doing it to like family and friends saying like, no, just try this, do this meditation, yeah. Do this thing. But actually I sometimes don't stick to it. And those are the days when I really struggle.
Yeah,
you're right. Just kind of giving in and letting it happen.
Yeah, giving yourself that grace as well. For sure.
Yeah. So I don't know if I've actually told you this story before, but so I first discovered you a couple of years ago. It was when I was doing a little tour of some universities and I was staying with some friends, okay. And we had a night off, yeah. And they said, let's go out and watch something. And the two options were Kacey Musgraves, who I absolutely love.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, there's this random poetry thing. And I was like, they had already bought the tickets. And they said, yeah, we're going to go to this poetry thing. And I was like,
you were like,
yay, can't wait. But then you got up on stage with like all these live musicians and all these other amazing poets. And I was honestly like blown away. And as you know, I've been obsessed with your work ever since. I got your book, I've watched your TED Talks, everything.
Oh, thank you.
So I really, no, you're welcome. Well, no, thanks for kind of coming into my life. But I wanted to ask you how important it is for you to be vulnerable in your work. Because you explore loads of issues like identity and faith and loss, and it must be quite like an exposing thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. And do you know what? I used to say it's important because it liberates other people's vulnerability, which I completely stand with. I think when you are open and honest about something, like how often do we gravitate towards art that we feel speaks to our situation? You know, yeah. When if I'm going through a breakup and I hear a breakup song, I'm going to listen to it 25 times in a row.
Yeah.
Probably more. It's probably all I'm going to listen to.
Yeah.
Because you feel as though it lends words to your feelings that you perhaps hadn't given words to. And it's like someone holding your hand and saying you're not alone. So I think the art's offering to me is that. And I think if I can offer that to people as well, that's great. But I actually think... And someone kind of pointed this out to me the other day. They kind of connected the dots that I'm speaking. I do it to liberate the younger version of me.
Wow.
Yeah. So when I've never been in my friendship group, I've never kind of been the loudest one. I've never been the one. I was never the one that would make plans. I was never kind of the vocal one in my friendship group. I was very, very passive, just kind of going with whatever. And if you put me in a group of new people, I'd be silent as a mouse. I'm still like that sometimes, I'm still like that most of the time, to be fair, unless I'm being paid to be on a panel, in which case I will dance for my dollar. But typically, yeah, like I was just very... I was very quiet and I had my spaces that I kind of expressed myself in. So in sports, I excelled. So I used to run for London and play basketball for London. But again, these are very silent things, like very, very silent things. And then I discovered poetry and there was something in how passive it was in its power that really spoke to me. Because I just thought, you're not rapping, you're not dancing, you're not singing. And people have a judgment on whether those things are good or bad. If you don't know about spoken word, no one can really turn around and say you're crap. And I think the safety of that and the safety of not doing something so in someone's face, it really spoke to my shyness. Like it really, really spoke to how shy I was at the time. And I just gravitated towards it. And I wouldn't really speak to people about it. Like I wouldn't speak to my friends about it. I wouldn't perform to my friends or anything like that until I got a lot older. But I think that was my space to express my vulnerabilities. That not even just my vulnerabilities, just my thoughts and feelings on things. That was my space to do it because I wasn't doing it in a friendship group. I wasn't doing it around the dining table, but I could do it on stage.
Yeah, so I'm the same as you. I find it way easier doing it in a song than it is singing and with these things with a friend.
Yeah.
But I also found, I heard you talking about it in an interview and you put it in such a great way. When you were saying, when you're discussing like really complex topics in poetry, it kind of allows you to address things in a sweet spot between not like fully art, but also not fully conversation, which kind of, I guess it allows the listener to digest what you're saying in a different way, perhaps like a lecture or something.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I completely, I really, really can see that. Are you a bit like me where you're really happy sort of playing the joker or playing a certain role in a friendship group, but then actually when it comes to talking about really serious stuff, sometimes you shy away from it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, absolutely. And I think, do you know what I was saying to my friend on the phone earlier? I'm in this crisis where I haven't been around people for so long. When I'm in a social group now, I might just overcompensate. I'll try and be really funny. And if when you're not really funny, it just comes across forced, you know, so I'll try and be really funny, or I'll try and be the really melancholy one. But it's been a long time since I felt like I'm just being, like just kind of like letting any idea of myself slip and just being whoever I am in that moment. But I think also it's because I haven't really been around my people in a while, right? So I've just been inside my head. So I think, I'm definitely the same as you. If I feel safe in that space, then I can definitely have those conversations. But I also think there's something about being the only girl in my family, the youngest of a few older brothers, and it being a very kind of African patriarchal home where I'm not necessarily used to being listened to. Not that I'm told to shut up, because it's never that, but being listened to is a very different thing. Like, listened to be understood as opposed to just heard, or for someone else to galvanize an opinion off what you've said, but just listened to. So I think lack of that definitely makes me love poetry even more, because it's kind of like you have paid to come and see me say some things that I was thinking about. so you will listen.
Yeah. Kind of let me do my stream of consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
But obviously in a really beautiful way.
Let's hope.
Yeah, you know, it is. I spent the other afternoon watching your TED Talks, which I loved. And that what you just said actually reminded me of the one about redefining ordinary.
Yeah.
Because you talked about having to like fit into loads of different boxes as a mixed race female poet. And I'm interested to know, like, do you think things are improving for women and women of colour, especially in the arts?
You know what? I wish you asked me this before this government report came out, because
it's
10 steps forward and just then we're standing still.
That was mind blowing. I can't believe it. It was also the phrasing they gave to it. What was the exact wording? It was like, we are a model of, you know, of how a country should be, or something.
My goodness.
Considering everything that was going on last year,
you know, it's just a relief to know that there's no institutional racism, you know, because I was really worried about that. I was really worried we had a problem on our hands with race, but it's good to know that we are a model of equality.
Yeah.
But no,
thank God everything's 100%
yeah,
fine.
Exactly. Like, thank God, because when all those riot protests were happening, I was getting a bit concerned, but good to know that things are good.
Oh, no, man.
It's shocking. But, you know, the other day I was at my friend's house. She works in Parliament. She works underneath a Tory MP. She's very liberal. Mm. She's very left wing, but she has a mortgage to pay. And she was basically saying that what she has found is that there is not this big conspirations against black people, against gay people, against people. They are actually a representation of society, just not London. Because when you leave London, like, Conservative Party is still up in the polls. Polls are very much by the people. They're winning these votes for a reason. Our elections aren't rigged. Like, in essence of democracy, their voice is the opinion of a lot of people. But we exist in our echo chambers, and our echo chambers feel really progressive, right? They feel really forward thinking. Yeah. But I think when we step outside our echo chamber, I think that's when we see the world for what it really is. Like, Parliament felt liberated enough to be able to say we haven't got a problem, a racial problem in society. Whereas I don't think I've spoken to anyone in the past year and a half who would agree with that. However, there is a majority of the population that might say the exact same thing. We haven't got a race issue, you know? So I think in terms of progress for women and women of colour, or black women, or Asian women, I think that what is good is that power has been decentralised. So we're less reliant on the government behaving to make ends meet. We're less reliant on Boris Johnson giving us a voice to be able to speak ourselves. And I think you can thank, like, social media for that, and independent bookshops, and just like the autonomy we now kind of create for ourselves. So I think in that respect, we're like, I think it's the decentralized power that is pushing progress, because I don't think it's institutions at all. So I think in that respect, yeah, definitely, like, women are claiming their space. They're creating the wall and building a door in it. And I think that is amazing, because I think waiting is, like, what are we waiting for? Do you know what I mean? Our government just, it just embarrasses us every single opportunity it gets. So I think...
It was really surprising also that report came out on the same day that, I mean, this is just in my industry, but with the music industry, they announced the Brit nominations, and it was the most women nominated and I think the most artists of colour in, wow, in like years and years, if not ever. And it feels like you said, in our echo chambers and in the arts, I personally feel like things do feel like they're improving, even though it's messy. But at the same time, you're right, it just doesn't filter out into the whole of society. Yeah. So actually we end up having really progressive sectors, but the whole mood of the nation and the world hasn't really changed that much. If anything, people kind of react to change and then go, do you know what, I think this is too far for me, you know, this is too liberal, this is too progressive, and then just kind of go the other way.
That's a really good way of saying it. We've kind of empowered our sectors.
And same with social, like you said, with social media, it feels like things are getting better because that's all we see, because that's how social media is designed. When actually, if we were looking at Instagram or Twitter or something in a completely different part of the country, we'd feel a completely different way.
Yeah,
I think.
For sure. The other day when I was actually in Regent's Park, I was sat with two of my friends listening to music, having a cracking time. And there was a white man behind us lying down on his own in the sun. And he was reading Natives, the Akala book, which I think talks about the history of empire. And it really struck me. And I obviously it's also because I haven't really been out, right? But it really struck me because I just thought, okay, like, change is definitely happening beyond. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I think that it just seemed like such a postcard of, like, the change that the people have, because it wasn't these institutions that are inherently racist that were saying, go and read this or check privilege or do all of these things. I mean, they're outright denying it, you know? So I think, again, as you said, it's just testament to the power of the people and the people coming together to check ourselves and be a better bunch of civilians, which is quite remarkable, like really, really remarkable. I was just really taken aback by it. And also just the fact that it was a sunny day and he was choosing to read about, like, how British people colonised people. I just thought, wow, you're really in this. Like, you're really, really for it.
Yeah, you could just be having a couple of beers with a friend, but actually you're willing to do the work.
Yeah, like me. Like, I try not to read political books on a normal day sometimes because it just triggers me, let alone in the sun in the park. So I really respected that.
That's really interesting, actually. And with that in mind, I love what you said about sort of... kind of setting free sort of young Sophia as well. And in an interview with, I think it was British Council India, I heard you speak about your experiences growing up, going to a predominantly white Irish school. And I think it was a story about you wanting to perform Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream poem in competition, even though your mum didn't want you to. But then you ended up, like, winning that competition, is that right?
Yeah, so this was in secondary school. Yeah. And I did a poetry competition and I basically wrote this poem. I think we had just learned about the civil rights movement, but I was also just starting poetry. So I was in this really, when I first joined the poetry scene, I was in this really Pan-Africanist, liberation, pro-blackness world, right? And I was being introduced to the truths of slavery and the truths of colonization and the truths of imperialism, and I was mad. I was 16 and angry, or 14, however old I was, and really angry. So I wrote this really impassioned poem just about Martin Luther King and the truth of history and whatever else. My mum was just like, nope. She was like, there's no way you're going to perform this. And I did, and I won. And I think that was the thing that broke the dam for me. I think that was definitely the thing that broke the dam, because I just thought, if I can do it here and win, I can do it anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So I think...
And it gives you that, especially as you say you were 16.
I was young. I can't remember exactly how old, but me and my age generally, I don't know my timeline at all.
Oh God, I still feel like I'm 12 years old.
Honestly.
And also this, I feel like this last year has really aged me, but at the same time, I can't wait to go back into society and be so stupid for the next like 5 years. Like I feel like I have so much being young and foolish to catch up on.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I had a week where I was going to bed at like 11 and waking up really early, and I was really proud of myself, and I just thought, I need to get back on tour.
I know. I feel so adult. I'm the same. I've had this new sleep routine where I've been getting up at like 8 a.m. every day, doing a little meditation, doing some yoga, making a nice little healthy breakfast, learning the guitar, like all these little things. But actually, I know that's all going to go out the window in a couple of months when we're allowed out. And I'm kind of excited for that, because as much as that feels good now and I'm patting myself on the shoulder, like I still need to be, I need to go, like, get my silliness out. I need
absolutely.
To be
I'm really tired of wholesome at this point.
I'm so bored of avocado.
Yeah, honestly, like, I just put some things back a little bit. I really do.
I want to also ask you about your other TED talk, because I loved it as well. It was called, I Think My Boyfriend Isn't Allowed to Cry. And I think we're all coming to realise now that we have a real issue with the notion of masculinity in this country, and a really bad epidemic of male suicide and men not being able to talk about their emotions. So I'd love to ask you what more you think men can do to help themselves.
Do you know what? I actually had a conversation that changed my opinion of this altogether the other day. I think in this space, what I've always said is, as women, make it safe for a man to express himself openly, free of judgment. And as men, speak to each other, like communicate, ask each other how we are. And now I know that that was quite a simplified approach to such a nuanced and personal experience of each individual man. I was driving with a friend and we were talking about pressures on society, and we hear a lot about female pressures in society, right? Whether it's body image or whether it's working or motherhood, whatever it might be. What we don't hear about is that men are expected, and this is what he was saying, he was like, he lives with this expectation and he's born into it, that when he's earning, he's not just thinking about himself, he needs to be able to make enough money for a family one day. I've never in my life considered earning enough for a family. Like, it has, the thought has not crossed, it has not crossed my mind once ever. And he was just like, you're born into it as a man because this is your responsibility. I know that I have to keep my physical upkeep well, I need to present as a man, like I need to be strong, I need to, I'm courting at the moment, so I need to mentally be here. Like, he was just like, you live with all of these pressures and they're all so fragile but so firm, and too firm to move into your mouth, so you don't speak about it. And when he said that, I just thought, you know what, it's so nuanced, and it's so, it's more than just speak to your friends and comfort your men, it's more, it's how has your relationship with your dad stopped you from putting yourself out there because you're scared of rejection? Or how has your relationship with your brothers, who are perhaps more gentle or more masculine, made you feel as though you made you suffer from inadequacy, and that inadequacy silences you? And it's just so like our reaction to our mind, how we relate to our mind, is so personal, right? And it's the exact same thing with men's mental health. Their relationship to it is going to be so personal. Like, my dad is half Gambian, half Indian, and in both of those cultures, you don't speak about it. Mental illness doesn't know what to answer to, so it answers to poverty, it answers to oppression. You call it lacking money at that time, that's what you call depression. You just think, I need to get more money because I'm upset. Or I'm upset because, like, a deal hasn't gone through, when really you have depressive traits, like you have depression, and there's another way to handle it. But when you don't know what to label it, it answers to anything. And I think it can then answer to male suicide, it can answer to rage, it can answer to it coming out in a relationship, it can answer to domestic violence, it can answer to so many things when we don't have a name to call it. And I think in our generation, thank God, like, we're labelling things now, we're giving things names, and we're having that conversation a bit more. But I think it is time. Like, I think we've passed that infancy stage where it's just talk about it. And I think we do need to go into that. What are you wearing from your past? What from your history lives inside your reaction to things? What is your why? Why are all of your relationships ending in the same way? Like, what are things rooted in? And I think as women, because we're conversational and we naturally do the kitchen table and we talk about things, we get to unpick ourselves quite, I think naturally we unpick ourselves quite a lot. But I feel like for the men around me anyway, or from what I've seen, it's not as common. I think it's definitely happening now, but I don't think it's as common as it is in like amongst women. So yeah, that I think we need to just go that step further than just talk about it. I think we need to talk about what we're talking about.
Yeah, you're so right. I love the way you've put all of that, but especially like the idea that we're now really encouraging men to allow women to talk about and to have the space to talk about really serious issues like harassment and things with what's happened in London in the last few weeks. But actually, we need to make sure that men feel like they have a say to talk about their own emotions, because I think often it's because it's such a new thing, people haven't really discussed men's emotions. Since the last 5 years or so. I went to an all boys school and it was just never talked about mental health, even just really minor discussions about day-to-day sort of mental things. And I'm so glad it's happening, but even then I feel like it could be happening just in our echo chambers, and that message really needs to be pushed out into the whole of society. Otherwise, I don't think the situation is going to improve
much. For sure. And also, like what you said is just so key as well, where I remember I was speaking at a masculinity event at Havas, and the people that ran the event, they were trying to get sponsorship because it was for Men's Mental Health Day or Men's Mental Awareness Day, something like that. And they were trying to get sponsorship, and no brand wanted to associate themselves with men's mental health at the time. They were just like, no, it's women. Wow. It's women we're talking about. And I've seen how silencing female empowerment has been to a large group of men as well. And I think the two have to work in tandem. And I say it all the time, like, if our aim is equality, then we can't overpower. As bad as it is, we need to dance together. Like, we need to, like, in essence of balance, we cannot push you down whilst we uplift ourselves. We need to do both. Like, we need to uplift. You've got your stuff you're struggling with, and we need to uplift each other. And I think what I've seen is we've seen different kinds of feminism wake up, right? And it's changed the world, and it is such a beautiful and thriving time to live in. But there is an aspect of feminism that very much thrives on the oppression of man. And not just the oppression of man's bad traits, so like things that perpetuate inequality, but just men in general. The men are trash narrative, the use men narrative, the get what you want from them, the I deserve everything and a man should serve me in every single way. These narratives that are being fed down to a younger generation are so toxic, not just for women, not just for men, in that it silences them even more, but for women as well, because then we're still empowering ourselves based on a man, you know, like we're still finding our empowerment at the hand of a man, even if it's to his detriment. And that means we haven't isolated our power yet. We're still very much in that reliance, I guess. Our power is still reliant on them in some capacity, and it's a very unhealthy capacity. So I think whilst more and more women speak up, I think one, we have to be really careful with our tone, but two, I think men should also be having the conversations about how they feel as though the way that they can speak or express themselves has changed, because the men I know, they've just been silenced so much over the past 2 years because it's not their conversation, it's not their time. But suicide is still high, you know? They still have the pressure to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. God, I could listen to you talk about these things for hours and hours on them. I'm so grateful you're willing to go there as well and broach them. I have one more question for you, and then I'm also so grateful that you're willing to do a little bit of poetry to close off the episode. So I was just wondering what advice you would give young poets or performers when they want to start exploring their own identities in their work, be them male or female.
I would say find your voice. And I know it sounds like quite cliche, but I think it's actually becoming really hard to decide what is your voice and what is the voice of Instagram's best engaged post or the most viral video. I think decide whether you want to be a business person or an artist. And if you want to be a business person, by all means, like, follow the engagement and follow the audience and follow the money. But if what you are at your core is an artist, and you accidentally go into this space of following someone else's voice and the loudest voice or the most popular voice, the way that will suppress you, it, to me, isn't worth it. And I think that can be really painful as an artist to see a mountain and see it as a comment on your life or to see someone else's engagement, I see it as a comment on your art. So what I would say is genuinely cultivate your voice. Like, if you need to mine into yourself, find what you like and dislike in other people's things, and remember that those likes and dislikes are personal and it's not based on who gets the most attention. I think you save yourself a lot of back and forth and being at war with yourself and your art if you just make peace and find comfort in your voice, and then carve that out as a skill. Because obviously you still need to monetize if you want to do it, but carve it out as a skill and your audience will find you, is I think what I would say. Because even me, like at the beginning of the pandemic, I was just churning out this content because everyone around me was doing it, and I was making content that had nothing to do with my heart, like nothing to do with what I actually enjoy. And then I realized I'm just in this rat race against nobody, like literally nobody. Like, I'm in a rat race against people online, and it's driving me crazy. And I had to remember, actually, you have the luxury of living a life and pursuing a career that is based on your passion. And right now, where you don't have to think about monetizing it because the world is closed, why are you still killing yourself? Like, why, do you know what I mean? Like, why are you still silencing your child? So I think, yeah, find your voice, find your child, and make peace with it. Like, make peace with that it's yours and it is enough. And your audience will come to you, is what I think I'd say.
Oh, I love that. Love that. Love that. Thanks so much. So to finish up this episode, I was so grateful that Sophia was willing to perform a little piece of poetry. But just before she does, I want to implore you to please go get a copy of her first poetry collection, Somebody Give This Heart a Pen. It's so beautiful, such a great read to dip in and out of. I've got a copy on my bedside table that I dip into when I can't sleep at night, and it's beautiful. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you've enjoyed it, I'm told liking it, subscribing, giving me a little 5 stars on whatever your podcast app of choice is, all that jazz. Apparently it really helps other people find us. And I can't wait to bring you the next episode of the series. But for now, this is Sophia Tarkor.
So this is a poem that I wrote after a conversation with a friend of mine who was telling me about the pressures of being a man that he doesn't really get to talk about. It just kind of sits as a shadow of himself in his mouth.
Wow.
If your head would deflate through the burn holes in your thoughts, if your lids would just lie there wet, washed up on shore, if your neck would untense and hang like a flag without wind, and your shoulders just surrender to gravity, if your back would only bend and break under the pressure, and knees snap out of place under the weight, if your ankles would only gather like a can being crushed, perhaps then the world will wake to the load men do not talk about, but carry throughout every single day. It's quite short.
Oh my God, I just put my head back, closed my eyes, and just let that like wash over me. It was so nice. I wish you could. Are you going to do? Please do an audiobook one day.
Yeah,
it would make my life. Thank you so much for doing this, Sophia. I really, really appreciate it.
It's been so lovely to chat.
Yeah, it's really, and I'm really glad you were. Yeah, really willing. You were able, like, willing to go deep on these things. It's it's so important, and I love your take on everything. It's so refreshing.
Oh, thank you. You know, just not being around people has made me forget what is acceptable to say or not, which I think is great.
Well, everything you said was far, but more than acceptable.
Okay.
Yeah, beautiful. Good.